Okay, so let me just start with an introduction a little bit. There's certain sort of givens, right? So we all know that Talmud Torah is central to our existence, right? Central to who we are, right? It's not a coincidence that people look at Jews and call them the people of the book. That's really very much a given, right? That central, that Talmud Torah is so critical, right? Another assumption is that teaching Torah to our children is critical, right? If you look at the Rambam, beginning of Talmud Torah, it's interesting that when describing the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, right, the first thing he talks about is not the mitzvah of Talmud Torah and the chiyuv of Talmud Torah or the specifics. The first thing he starts with really is the mitzvah of teaching your children Torah, right? That's the first seven halachos in Mishnah Torah. And then if you go further, you see he spends a lot of time focusing on that, on that topic. So that's how he introduces the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. There are gemaras that talk about the chiyuv to teach your children Torah. Gemara Kedushin talks about this. So these sort of things are all sort of obvious and givens to us. What's interesting is how much time do we as parents really spend, if it's so important to us, how much time do we really spend thinking about how to teach Torah to our kids? When we get to it, I'll reference a little bit some of the some of the things I've seen, right? You walk into Beis HaMedrash anywhere, in your Teaneck Bergenfield, and you'll see a lot of parents who are learning with their children. And I don't know that when they learn with their children, we place in the community a very strong value of learning with our children. I don't know that we think so much about what we're trying to achieve, how we're trying to achieve it. So that's what I really want to do today, is just give a little bit of background based on sort of just educational best practices and, what the data shows works, what doesn't work. So try to really think about what best practices are. So let me just start first, though, before that, with there's a famous gemara that just has to be mentioned, and I think that relates to the role of schools vis-a-vis parents, right? So we know that the obligation of Talmud Torah really is an obligation that falls upon the parents. There's a famous gemara about Basra that, that praises Rabbi Shubin ben Gamla. Rishu Magamla was the individual who came up with the concept of universal education. Started originally really for orphans. He saw that there were people who didn't have parents, so who's going to teach them? So he created a decree that it was important to have universal schooling, in every city. And he's praised for that. It's gotten to a point now, when you look at the Rambam Shulchan Aruch, where we understand that the schools are, to a certain extent, our shaliach, right? They're our messengers in helping us fulfill this obligation to teach our children. But it's pretty clear also that the role of parents still is critical, both in terms of halacha, and I would say even more importantly, in terms of sociology. As a principal of a school, it's pretty clear, you can tell very easily, obviously every child is different, but if you had to generalize and put different students into different categories, it's pretty clear you can tell what a home is like when you see the child, right? So as important as day schools are, and I have to be careful about saying this because I'm a principal of a day school, as important as day schools are, at the end of the day, the home plays a far more critical role in developing the religiosity of any child. So that's a little bit of background. There were many gedolim. Rav Soloveitchik used to talk about this a lot, about the impact that learning, because this was a big Brisker thing, right? Briskers didn't create yeshivas that often, right? They would learn with their children. He used to talk a lot about the impact he had in learning with his father. There's a story I heard from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein once that he said that once he heard him say that when he goes to Shemaim, Hashem's going to ask him, based on what do you deserve to go Olam Haba? And he said one of the three things was the fact that he learned with his children, right? Which just gives you a sense of how important that was to him. So what I want to try to do now is talk a little bit about, so what exactly, how should we be learning with our kids? And I want to go through a bunch of different phases, right? So the phases are going to be, number one is going to be determining the goals, right? What are we trying to achieve when we learn with our kids? Once we do that, we'll talk about what topics should I be learning with my kids, how to teach, right, pedagogy, and then a little bit on last two topics, checking for understanding. We'll talk a little bit about more about what that means, and then teaching for inspiration. So when we think about the goals, right, there are a lot of ways to dissect what we're trying to achieve when we learn. I hear a perspective very often that I'm not sure I believe in. People sort of think there's like these two poles, right? You can be teaching for skills, right? Or you can be teaching for inspiration, get kids to love learning, etc. The assumption there is that in teaching for skills, skills can be rote, it can be boring, and you sort of have to choose, right? And a lot of people will say, look, I recognize that that piece is important, but at the end of the day, like, I don't want to turn my kid off. I don't want me to be bored and not excited about their learning. I'm not sure. I don't really believe that that paradigm is really the case. I'll tell you why. When you think about, like, what we're trying to achieve, so in my mind, right, teaching our kids Torah is a marathon, not a sprint. And as such, the question is, how are they going? Obviously, our goal is to get them to love learning, to lead a life, you know, a life filled with learning Torah. And how do you get them there? So, you know, one of my mantras is mastery breeds enjoyment. If a student can't do something, it's torturous. Right? So, and I see it all the time. Kids who are in a Gemara class in high school and they're sitting there and they can't read the Gemara, you are basically asking them to do something they're not capable of doing. So in my mind, from the beginning, now how we achieve that is something we'll talk about. From the beginning, to me, the goal has to be, or at least a central goal has to be, how can you give them the tools necessary to be successful in their learning? Right? And the reality is that they're learning stuff primarily, at least in terms of our aspirational goals in our community at least, that are not in English, right? They are in different languages. They're in Hebrew, they're in Aramaic. So giving them some of those skills and doing it obviously in an appropriate way, I think is really critical. So I don't see them as two poles necessarily. And we'll talk at the end a little bit more about learning for inspiration. But I do think that the skills piece is a really important aspect of learning. And I'll tell you what I usually see. Right, so I'll give you an example as a story. So a few years ago, there was a child who finished eighth grade and was going on to yeshiva. So it's summer break, he's 2 months, he's at home, and the parents decided that because he's going to yeshiva, they're nervous about his Gemara skills. So they said, you know what, we'll get him a tutor. Great, right? The more learning he does, the better. So the tutor was somebody from the local kollel who was learning with him twice a week. And I would go at night into the basement medrash, and when I saw them learning, I would just listen in and see what they were doing. And what was interesting was, so here's sort of the picture of what it looked like, right? The kol guy would open the Gemara, whatever Gemara they were doing, and would start reading, right? Reading and translating, and every once in a while, he would turn to this kid in eighth grade and ask him, you know, you understand, are you following? And then he would just keep going, right? And it sounds a little bit crazy, because this poor kid, you know, probably may have had no clue what was going on, but even if he did, from the perspective of the parents who hired this kollel guy so that he could better prepare this student for ninth grade for the intense Gemara they were going to be doing, he was gaining very, very little, right? And I just tell that story because that's a story where the goal was very clear, right? The goal here was we want to better prepare our child for ninth grade when he's going to yeshiva. But the truth is, if you walk into a shul where you have a group of parents learning with children, that's generally what you'll see, right? You'll see, to a certain extent, the parent doing most of the heavy lifting for a lot of reasons, right? One is because they've never thought about this issue. Sometimes they just want to cover ground. And the kids really are not doing that much heavy lifting. So that's, I think, the starting point, which to me is really important. A few things in terms of teaching for skills. You know, we really need to think very carefully about how we are going to ensure that our children are actually gaining skills. So let's talk about that in different contexts, in the context of choosing a topic, how to teach and checking for understanding. So in terms of choosing a topic, obviously this is age appropriate, and much of what I'm saying, I think, has to be sort of general principles, because every child is different. Right, so in a classroom, you're a little bit more limited. You know, you've got 20 kids in a classroom, so you have to sort of figure out how best to address all their needs. When you're dealing with a one-on-one situation, or even a one-on-two, one-on-three situation, you have much more flexibility and can speak much more directly to the needs of a specific child, which I think is important. So all these, that's the one caveat. You know, it's interesting. When I speak to parents who learn with their children, you see incredible extremes, right? You have parents who will describe their learning with their children as the most fulfilling aspect of their day, of their week, of their month. It's so enjoyable. And then you have parents who, after like 45 minutes of learning with their kid, they're exhausted, right? It's been torturous getting them to the table to learn. A lot of that is just different personality of children, right? So I think sometimes parents with children who don't want to be learning beat themselves up too much. And they just have to recognize that, like, the different children at different ages, sometimes, you know, for a middle school kid, for example, to not want to sit down and learn Gemara, that's probably developmentally appropriate, right? Doesn't mean we just leave it as is, but it's something you shouldn't beat yourself up too much about. So first of all, in terms of choosing topics, obviously you have to think about an appropriate level, right? Depending on what age they are is one factor. I'll give you a few examples, like Gemara versus Mishnah. So just using middle school again as an example, I would say in middle school, probably about 35% of students are probably not ready for learning Gemara, right? They're just not developmentally ready yet. What schools do with that? It's, you know, in an ideal world, if you were to ask me, I would love to see a revamp of the system and spend much more time learning Gemara in middle school. That's not going to happen. So schools have to grapple with that and figure out, under those circumstances, what are we going to do about that? How do we best give students the skills to learn Gemara? But once again, if you're learning with your children, you have that advantage where you can try to figure out what's the most appropriate topic to learn with your students. You know, so some of the factors are going to be what is it you're trying to achieve. So as an example, let's say you decide, and I think this is a top priority, vocabulary, right? Especially when you're thinking about Gemara. If your kid is not yet ready for Gemara, but you want them to be learning Gemara, giving them stronger vocabulary skills will set them up in a very positive way for when they are ready to learn Gemara. Think about words like meitve, urim minhu, like those type of words, which are not just words that you translate, right? Those are key words that give you much more insight into what's happening in a Gemara. So even knowing those words, I think, is very helpful. Even within Gemara or Mishnah or any other topic, thinking about what you're going to learn. I'll give you an example with Mishnah, right? So Mishnayot, usually people will start learning Mishnayot with you know, some of the easier Moed Mishnayot. They'll pick, you know, Mishnayot like Rosh Hashanah, Sukkah. So I've always told people, you know, and this is a little bit, you know, surprising to people, if I was to pick the first Mishnah I would do with children in Mishnah would be Yuma, right? So Yuma is about the Avodah on Yom Kippur. And people say, what are you talking about, right? So esoteric, it's not real, you know, it's hard to relate to it. We don't know much about it. So Yuma is 8 Prakim. But here's what's interesting about it. And these are things you need to be thinking about when you pick a topic. Yuma is basically a story, right? It starts with before Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is preparing for his day. And then it takes you through the 7 days before Yom Kippur. It takes you through the entire day, step by step. It's not that there are very few complex topics in Yuma, number one. So that's number one. Number two, there's a tremendous amount of repetition of words. So when we get to how to teach, and if one of our goals is to try to get the kids more fluent in their learning, something that has a lot of repetition of words is actually really, really helpful. So I have found that out of all the, having gone through, like, you know, learning Mishnah at Moed with different kids, my own kids, a few times, I found that Yuma is probably the best mission to start, which is something you wouldn't expect. We make assumptions based on what we know often, right? So we know all these, like, things from Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, for example, has some complex topics, right? So it's not necessarily something that our kids know. So that's something to think about. Aside from that, there's one part of Yuma which is really exciting to boys, right? The section where they talk about the Shir Azazel, right? That two goats. So one of the goats was thrown off the cliff. That's always boys' favorite. They get really excited at that point. They threw the animal off the cliff, and the Mishnah says that the animal would sort of be broken, the limbs would be broken into pieces before it even hit the ground, right? And whenever we get to that part, that's like the boys can't stop talking about that. That's so exciting to them, which is sort of funny, typical of like third or fourth grade boys. So that's in Mishnah. Just using a few other examples, I'll use Gemara as an example and Navi as an example, right? So in Gemara, I find often people learn Gemara with their children before their bar mitzvah, right? There too, they will usually pick a topic based on length. So people will look at Gemaras like Rosh Hashanah, Megillah, Tanis. So just focusing on Tanis for a minute. Tanis people like because it's a lot of stories, right? So here's why I don't like that. In the Gemara, the stories tend to have language that is far more difficult. So you can get through it probably relatively quickly, but at the end of the day, if you're asking what will my child be getting out of this learning, probably I think much less, right? So I'm more interested in that language that is repetitive, that recurs throughout all of Shas, because that's what I want to have my child see on a regular basis. If they're seeing these stories with language that is rarely used, I don't know that they're going to really get that much out of it. Using Navi as an example, also Navi is complicated too, because in Navi, if you want to pick topics to learn Navi, the easiest ones are the ones you learn in school. So often you say, well, I want to learn something they're not learning in school, but like Navi Machronim is a little bit challenging to learn with children. So that's sort of just a little bit in terms of really thinking through what topics you want to learn based on what is age appropriate, as well as thinking about within each topic what it is specifically that you want to learn. So that's, I think, a little bit just in background in terms of choosing a topic. Even more importantly, how to teach, right? So number one is whatever your goals are, I always say share that with your children, right? Any good teacher will make it clear to their students what it is that they're learning and why, right? So often we don't even think of that. We just say, like, we're learning, right? It's important to learn Torah. But you can be much more explicit with your children. Children are able to appreciate much more. When they understand the goal, I think it's much more meaningful to them. So you can say, you know, give them a little bit of background, the importance of Talmud Torah, explain to them how it's important, why it's important, and why we are learning the specific topics that we are. Maybe, you know, if like I'm, you know, I focus often on skills, you can describe why we picked this, because I think this will be really good for you. It'll make you enjoy learning in school more. You will enjoy learning in general more because your skills will grow. Those are, I think, important initial conversations to have with children. Getting back to the example I gave before about the cool person learning with the kid, so I think that you should, the more you can empower your child to what I would describe as lead your learning session, the better, right? But it has to be scaffolded. What I mean by that is, let's say you're learning, I'll use this Gemara as an example again. You want them to be successful, right? So when a child who has only a few years of learning under their belt looks at a page of something in a language that they're not so fluent with, and especially something like with Gemara, which has no nekudos, which has no punctuation, it can be incredibly intimidating, right? So that's where a parent can play a role in helping scaffold by creating sort of a structure for them that makes it much easier. So what does that look like? So I'll give you one or two examples, right? So, you know, when I've studied Mishnah with either my children or other children, like for years I had this like Shabbos group with third and fourth graders. And what we used to do was we would take turns reading. I think there were like four or five of them in the group. So each kid would read a line. And that was just because we wanted them to practice their Kriya, right? We wanted them to practice their reading. So we'd read one line. One line doesn't take that long to read one line. My rule always for all the kids when you're dealing with more than one kid was finger on the place, right? And I would keep my finger on the place too, because that's a good way for them to sort of just remind that they are focused. And then we would translate it together. And the reason we would translate it together as a group was because if I would ask one kid to read and translate, in that, like, 20 seconds, the other four kids are lost, right? You've lost them already. But when they know that they're going to have to translate, you can pretty much keep them sort of all, you know, involved at the same time. As we were reading, right, we would look at each word. And because the goal here was to help them with their skills, if they didn't know a word, right, the first thing I would try to do was try to find, you know, see if they could figure out what the shoresh was, try to find, figure out what the prefix, what the suffix is, those type of issues, so that they can continually be thinking on their own about what the word means and how to dissect it, right? So they're doing most of the work, right? They're doing most of the heavy lifting. The less I'm doing, the better, right? That's you know, using Mishnah. Gemara is complicated because it's just one, like, you know, length, it looks like one lengthy sentence. So there the key was to try to help them sort of break it into pieces, right? Understanding keywords, you know, first of all, keywords sort of function as, you know, new sentences. But even more than that, what does a keyword do? What does tashma do? What does meitve do? All those words are critical. And usually when you ask a child to read in Gemara, they'll just read it. Right, so you can help them, right, if you know that they're not able to figure out where to start and stop, help them have them read and have them, you know, figure out where to stop and then explain to them why that's a stopping place, right? There's a stopping place. How do we know that? Because the word meitve is a new topic, so obviously that means that we stop here. Then, the first few years of Gemara, for most kids, they're not going to be able to figure out on their own what's a question, what's an answer. So there, you know, that's another area that I would sort of support them with, right, by helping them understand, you know, let's try to figure this out. Is this a question? Is this an answer? What is the Gemara trying to achieve? Some of those basics, I think, are very important. Now, what I'm describing here, one of the challenges with it is it means you go much slower, right? And I feel like often people are learning are pressured to cover ground. I just think that at the end of the day, if you're going to cover a lot of ground but not achieve what your original goal was, that just, it's just not worth it. Related to the keyword piece, so the question I've seen a lot, people sort of how to translate words. So what I mean by that is, so I'm a little bit of a purist on that. There are some words like a word like ibayit ema, right? Ibayit ema is, in terms of function, those words are an introduction to a second answer, right? But I think that it's helpful to take that word apart, right? The ibayit ema. I means if, bayi means want, ema I will say, right? So you're giving the your child an understanding of not only what the word's function is, but also what it means, and now it sort of makes more sense to them. They can put it together, right? So there are a lot of words like that, which I think that it's helpful to try to figure out what the literal translation is. My favorite book in this, by the way, this is not a book I would recommend for kids, because it's complex, but Understanding the Talmud by Rabbi Feigenbaum is a fabulous, fabulous work in that area, if you're learning Gemara with kids. He takes all the important keywords, and not only does he translate them and give you sort of a little bit of background in terms of how they're used, but he has a long piece on each one which describes very clearly and very precisely what the function of each word is. So it's not for kids, but it's helpful for an adult who's learning with their kids to be able to use just as an aid when they are learning with their kids. Some other things I think that are just helpful in terms of how to teach. One is appropriate length of time, right? And there is no appropriate length of time, but you can usually tell, right? It's pretty clear, some kids are capable of learning 15 minutes, some kids half an hour. You can usually tell when that time is over. So that's just one thing to think about. Going over the appropriate length of time can sometimes be very counterproductive. I see it in learning and davening, watching kids, the difference between when they start going to minyan, the difference between a Tuesday and a Monday is incredibly significant. That extra 8 minutes of, by the end of tahnun, when they just space out and they zone out, so that's, I think, an important thing to think about. Again, it really depends on each child. Another thing that I think is obvious but worth saying is when one has multiple children, one has to make sure never to compare children, right? And that's true not even when learning, right? Even at the Shabbos table, it's just a very unhealthy thing. And it's hard because as parents sort of, sometimes it's sort of, you say something instinctively without thinking, but I think that's something that someone has to be that we have to be very careful about. So that's a little bit in terms of just basic pedagogy, thinking about how to learn. I mean, I haven't mentioned Chumash, I think Chumash and Navi would be the same. Depending on what grade a kid is in, when they're younger, just Kriya, right? I've seen so many middle school kids who struggle with basic reading, and it's no different than English, right? Reading is critical to everything they will be doing in all of their Limudei Kodesh. So when they're first grade, second grade, just practicing Kriya with them. I used to do that with my kids when they were young. We just open a Chumash to anywhere, and I would just have them read a bunch of Psukim. That alone, that fluency is really so, so important. So with Chumash and Navi, it's really very similar, right? You can take apart a Pasuk and say, okay, what words do we know in this Pasuk? And treat it almost like a jigsaw puzzle, right? Can we figure out what this Pasuk is saying based on the words? And there might be some areas where there are words that are very hard that they may need support. And if that's the case, then you help them with whatever those words are. So that's a little bit of the first part of how to teach. The other piece, I think, is checking for understanding, right? So in Judaic literature, there's a lot of emphasis on chazara, right? The problem is when you are learning with your kid, in yeshivas, they talk about chazara, reviewing all the time because they want to make sure that you really master your learning. For a child, chazara is really, really boring, right? So I remember when I started learning with my kids, my younger kids, and I remember I decided they were going to master all the material, right? And we were going to review and go over it a bunch of times, and they were so bored immediately, right? It didn't go anywhere. So as a result, I had to sort of, adapt that and say, look, I'm still not willing to give up on ensuring that my children are moving towards mastery in certain areas. But clearly, the chazara piece in my situation was clearly not working. So it got me to start thinking about, okay, so what are the most important aspects And how do I ensure that at least they're getting that? So what did that look like? It could look like different things, right? It could look like one example would be you learn, let's say, Shabbos afternoon with your child, right? The next Shabbos afternoon, let's say you're doing Mishnayot. Next Shabbos afternoon, you did Mishnah Aleph and Bet last week. Now you're trying Mishnah Gimel. So look back before you start at Mishnah Aleph and Bet. What were the most important concepts? What were keywords? Things like that. And maybe start by just, you know, talk about those few words. Let's review. What did this word mean? What does that word mean? They may not recognize or remember everything, but it's a way to, you know, just review it. And if it's a really important thing, right, let's say in Gemara, some of the basic words, then sometimes I might do that for a few weeks in a row. Just we'll start every session with like three or four words. Oh, remind me, what does this word mean? What does that word mean? If there are concepts, you know, that I think are important, then I'll do that too, right? Let's just talk about the concepts. So that's the beginning. You can do that in the middle of learning as well, right? Sometimes it can be fun. You could even say to your child, you know what, I'm going to pepper you with like the most important pieces every once in a while. So I'm going to keep asking you, you know, what does the word mitzvah mean, right? So in the middle of our learning, we finish talking, oh, remind me again, what does mitzvah mean, right? By keeping just, that's one way of reviewing that it's quick, it's concise, and at least it allows you to think about what are the most important things or the important aspects that I want to make sure that my child gets. The other thing I've seen a lot when parents learn with children is they're not checking for understanding at all. So often a parent will learn for a child for 20 minutes, half hour, and the child is sitting there and is obedient and is sort of getting something, but really is not following and really doesn't have, you know, any concept. So I think that the more you can keep children engaged, the better. And sometimes it's just sort of, you know, stopping and asking them, not in a way that feels like a test, but you know, this is the question of the Mishnah or the answer or whatever. So let's see, do you understand it? Like, just tell me what the question was, right? And it slows things down once again, but in the big picture, it's worth it because if they're not understanding what they're learning, then, you know, what are you really achieving? So those are just like things to think about in terms of checking for understanding. One other important aspect, I think, is success breeds success, right? When it comes to learning, some people instinctively want to make sure that their kid got everything, right? So you learned, let's say, five psukim, and you know that your child knows the easy parts, right? So why test them on that, right? So I'm going to test them on the pieces that they don't know because I want to make sure that they cover everything. So what I'm going to do is I'll ask just the more difficult questions, and if they know those, then that's great. That means they know everything, right? And if they don't, then I know what I have to review. The mistake there is that you still want to build up their self-confidence. So that's where sometimes asking the children questions that are easier is actually helpful, right? Let them be successful, right? Nobody wants to, when kids go to school, nobody wants to get a 60 on a test, right? 60, I know we were just talking about, you know, one of the previous sessions was about grade inflation. 60, theoretically, should mean that you know 60% of the material, right? Now, knowing 60% of the material is not so bad, but still, it's demoralizing. So that means that if you want your child to feel like they got a 90, then you probably have to ask them a lot of questions, including a bunch of sort of basic, obvious questions that you would be shocked if they didn't know, right? And that way, you're asking them 10 questions, and they get 8 right, or 7 right, and they feel like, wow, I've really like mastered this, right? I know what I'm learning, I know what I'm doing. So that's, I think, an important piece. One other thing I would say, just related to checking for, this question of checking to make sure that they understand, there's a lot of literature lately about how to praise for the right things, right? So praising a child because they're smart is not really helpful, and it's also seems to be counterproductive. Why? Because if I know I'm smart and I'm being praised that I'm smart, then I have no reason to work, right? Because that's what, you know, that's what's valued, my smartness, right? As opposed to praising a child for working hard. Wow, you know what? We just spent half an hour. You really worked very hard, and see, as a result, you know all these words, right? So that's just something to think about in terms of, you know, praising accomplishments rather than talent, I think, is another piece of it. So far, we talked a little bit about, you know, trying to focus on skill building, which I think is a critical component because that's how you're really going to get to enjoyment of learning. We talked a little bit about, you know, how to think through what you're trying to teach. And then, even more importantly, thinking through how you're going to teach, as well as how you're going to check for understanding. So let me just stop here and see if anyone has any questions or thoughts before we... Yeah.
So in my Chumash class this past year, what my Rebbe did, this is something that she's been doing for years, is that when we're learning, if there's like a grammatical thing which comes up lots of times in the Chumash, he'll give us what he likes to call the skills, like basic skills that we do, and then each time on the bottom, he gives us like a little assignment to do, see if we understood it, and each time he adds on things from the last skill that we did to make sure that we still know it.
Right.
And we also did 100 words. So these words, he gave us 3 each day, and then all the time the goal was to see if we could do all the words that we learned in the lowest time possible. So at one point we actually did 100 words in 128 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you can find a lot of this stuff online, by the way, right? Like, there are places where, like, if you want your child to, you want to support them in terms of what they're learning in school, there are places online where you can find the 200 most commonly used keywords in Shas, for example. Or, like, in Chumash also, there's, like, there are lists of, right, words that are, right. So you can find that, and, you know, you can even find online, you can find places where there are, like, quizzes and games and stuff like that, just to review those type of things if you're not learning, let's say, a Sefer or something like that. So I think we're just about out of time. So let me just finish with just a few thoughts about teaching for inspiration. So number one is there a lot of... obviously, we want to teach for inspiration. So I don't want to make it sound like we're all about drilling and skills. And I think that's the key to inspiring students. But, you know, like using Hakel as an example, right? In Hakel, we're told they brought the children because there was an experience. So... 2 or 3 quick thoughts, right? So number one is how to inspire children. So a lot of the programs that we go to, you know, plug our kids with candy and prizes and all those things. The challenge with that is that the research has shown that extrinsic motivation doesn't really work, right? Intrinsic motivation does, extrinsic motivation does not. If you teach constantly and a student knows that they are going to get a reward for the teaching, as soon as the reward goes away, you see serious regression, right? That's one of the challenges. Now, that being said, right, so obviously we want kids to learn Lishma. I don't think it means that there's no place for rewards. I think it just means we have to be careful about how we use the rewards. Because if the choice is no learning or learning for a reward, right, they're obviously not going to get anything from their learning if they have no interest in learning. So it just means I think we have to be careful about how we motivate, right, kids to learn. And part of that, I think, is what I started with, sometimes talking to kids themselves about why it is that we're doing the learning. Right? They may not get it now, but if that is a constant conversation over time, the hope is as they get older, they will begin to understand that, and what we all aspire for, the intrinsic motivation, will be helpful. One or two other things also. So teaching for inspiration, as our kids are going to camp, right? They're off to camp now. When kids come back from the summer and you ask them, what did you learn, right? Even the camps, many of the camps that have serious learning, unfortunately, often kids will come back and say, not really sure, right? Like, they don't really know what they learned, right? The camp, now, to be fair, camp is a very difficult environment when you know that the next session is basketball. It's a very difficult for the poor learning rabbi to spend 45 minutes or an hour learning with the kids. So it poses a real dilemma, and I, you know, some camps have done a better job at this than others, I think. But what ends up, unfortunately, I think, happening is they focus only on trying to inspire the kids by telling them stories and schmoozing with them about Jewish-related topics. And at the end of the day, after a month, they really haven't done much learning, right? So while that's not the topic here, I do want to mention one aspect related to camp learning, which I think is helpful for parents as well, and that's just to mention experiential education, right? So experiential education... is something that I think it's helpful for parents to think about as well. In a camp environment, I've always felt that, like, they should be learning halacha, right? Because halacha, experiential education, is something you can do in a camp, right? So halacha, let's say you pick any topic, let's say you're learning Hilchos Shabbos, right? So, like, go to the kitchen and, like, actually make something and actually, you know, practice it. You know, right? Research has shown that when you learn in a textbook fashion, from chapter 1 to chapter 2, even if you memorize all the information, it's very difficult to then assimilate that knowledge and apply it. And halacha really is the art of application. So experiential education can be very productive, right? Like, learn the laws of tefillas kelim, and then go ahead and tovel the new dishes for camp, right? Or what, you know, there's so many. You can probably pick any area of halacha and think of ways that you could do serious applications. And the truth is, so I mentioned this camp environment, but really getting back to our topic, you can do this in a home environment as well, right? There are a lot of really exciting things. This could be a whole topic in itself. And unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd love to have spent more time after the session if people want to talk more about this. I think that's something really to think about as a way, if one's child is not interested in learning, there are a lot of experiential education methodologies that one can use. There's just a different way of thinking about learning that I think that could be very productive. So just to end, you know, there's Gemara Shabbos on Adaf, I think Kuf Yud Tes, that Rish Lakish says, name of Yehuda Nasi, that the world exists because of the learning of Torah of children. And the Gemara explains that what's the difference? Because the rabbis were saying even more important than like great rabbis, and the answer was yes, because children are clear from chait, right? There's a purity about children that exists, and that's why it is so important. The Gemara there even says that children learning Torah is more important than even the building of the Beis Hamikdash, right? So Mirz Hashem, the Beis Hamikdash should be rebuilt soon. The Torah teachers, whether they're parents or shluchim of parents, it's more important when the Beis Hamikdash is being built for those teachers to actually be sitting themselves and learning with their kids than to even rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. Just gives us a sense of how important this is. So while we only had half an hour now, I do think that in general, for us to really think carefully about what our goals are and what our sort of methodologies are in terms of how we teach is something that's really worth putting a little bit of time into so that we can be more successful in learning with our children. So thank you.